This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We're deviating slightly from our normal series of in the Book of Shmuel and the study of the development of the throne of King David, to deal with a topic that we touched on in our last shiur, and that is the personality and the character and the flaws of a man called Doeg, a man who was enormously destructive in the use of his mouth. And I thought this would be an opportunity to briefly explore the basis, the approach to, and the laws of what we call Lashon Hara. And Lashon Hara is a general term used for three technically different verbal activities, broadly translated as slander or character assassination. Lashon Hara, the three different categories are firstly what we call Rechilut, second one is Lashon Hara, and the third one is Hotzah Shemra. Rechilut is mischief making. Lashon Hara is slander that is true and accurate. And Motzah Shemra is slander that is untrue and inaccurate. It is a common fallacy, a common error to assume that something is Lashon Hara only if it's a lie. That isn't so. If it's a lie, it is not Lashon Hara. It is worse than Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is only when it is true. So to say something libelous, to say something slanderous of another person that is true, is called Lashon Hara. If it's untrue, Lashon Hara literally means a bad tongue. And we'll see where that phrase comes from. If it's untrue, it's called Hotzah Shemra, which is the broadcasting of a bad name, the creation of a bad name. Where does the term Lashon Hara come from? It comes from a phrase in Tehillim in Psalms, where King David says, Mi ho'ish echofetz chayim. Who is the man who truly loves life? Oihev yomim liros tov. Who loves days to see goodness. The Malbim explains it very beautifully, and I want to go through. By the way, I'm going to use texts this evening. I was hoping possibly to have copies of them for you. That didn't work out, but it doesn't matter. We'll go through them. I don't want this just to be a discussion about Lashon Hara. I would like us actually to study the Torah that deals with Lashon Hara firsthand, so that you're studying the Torah. We're not just having a discussion. So I would like to read the Malbim verbatim to you. He says, on the next phrase, what about a person who loves life? Mi ha'ish. He says, who is the man, the Malbim says, when King David says, who is the man who loves life? Mezirei ha'akum, non-Jewish religious personalities, porshu es atzmam min ha'ilam, have separated themselves from the world. Or mitzat shema'asu mechayim, or because they have a negative attitude to life. It's interesting that religious leaders often have a negative attitude to life, says the Malbim. Or mitzat shema'asu b'tov ha'olam, or because they despise the goodness of the world. What a brave phrase of the Malbim. That the non-Jewish religious establishment is negative on life and the goodness of life. So they choose to live in pain and suffering. Aval ani, but I, says King David, alamed yiras Hashem gam la'ish hechafetz chayim. I'm willing to teach God-fearingness to people who crave life, who love life, who are passionate about life. That's who I'll teach to. The gam la ish ha'ev yomim liros tov, and also to the man who loves days to see goodness. She yuchal lichyos im yiras Hashem, that it should be possible for him. Listen to the words of the Malbim. That it should be possible for him to learn the fear of God, and with that to live a life of success and goodness. They are not in conflict. Don't think of God fearing and poverty. Don't think of God fearing and suffering. Don't think of God fearing and failure. Think of God fearing and success. Think of God fearing and comfort. Think of God fearing and wealth. That's okay in our religion. Because fear of God does not require of man to separate himself from social interaction. An amazingly important piece of writing, this. Like Zoistavakesh, it only requests the following. So again, let me get the verses right, because part of what I'm reading to you is the actual words of King David, and part of what I'm reading you is the Malbim's interpretation of those words. So what I've explained to you is the first verse. Mi ho'ish, who is the man, a real man, a living man, not a priest that lives in some monastery on a hilltop and never comes into town. Mi ho'ish, who is the man, hechofetz chayim, who is passionate about life. Oyev yomim liris tov, and he loves days, he loves life, and he wants to live a life of success. Says King David, he's my student. That's the man I want to teach. I want to teach him how to live a life of success with God fearing. What does it require? That you stop interacting? That you stop engaging? No. It requires metzor le'shoincho mero. Watch your tongue. Watch your tongue from evil and your lips from deceit. And the Vilna Gaon and others explain why the difference between the tongue and the lips. The tongue is inside the mouth. The lips are the outside. The lips are the interface between the face and the outside. You can deceive people with your lips too. You can smile when you're not feeling smiley. You can say words, form words that you don't really mean. So the internal part of language, watch the internal part of language, that it shouldn't be evil, and watch the lips, that they shouldn't be deceitful. Explains the Malbim. That means simply, shelo yidaber loshon hara b'loshon. Don't use your tongue to talk loshon hara. But also, don't, while not deceiving people, don't withdraw from society. Raksur meira. Now we go on with the next verse, the third verse of King David's statement. Sur meira ve'aseh tov. Desist from evil and do good. Bakesh shalom. Quest for peace. Verotfehu, and pursue it. So those are the three sentences. The one is, who am I addressing? I'm addressing people who are passionate about life. What am I teaching? Don't talk lashon hara. Don't deceive. Desist from evil. Do good and pursue peace. That's what I'm teaching. Explains the Malbim. When I say to you, says King David, Sur meravi asay tov, desist from evil and do good, shetimotzei ben bnei odom shesham yesh metzius la'asos ra v'gam tov. I want you to be in a society where you could do good, and you can do good, and you could do evil. There's no kunz in being separated from society where you can't do good and you can't do evil, because there's nobody around you. Engage, get into life. Now you're confronted with opportunities for good and opportunities for evil. I want you to do good. And in society, desist from evil and do that which is good. Mashenkin Bamidbar, if you just get into a desert somewhere, you won't have an opportunity to do good. You won't be able to desist from evil. There is no opportunity for evil. Where there are no people, there's no evil. Where there are no people, there's no good. So you can take one view of people and say they're awful and evil and I want nothing to do with them, and that way I won't be involved in bad things. Yeah, but nor will you be involved in good things. There are rewards to social interaction and there are risks to social interaction. And if you then, since you're going to be engaging with society, bakesh shalom, pursue, request for peace, shu shalom ha-kibbutz ha-medini, quest for society, for people who get on with each other socially. Don't seek peace by escaping engagement, by escaping confrontation. The route to peace is not to run away from conflict. Engage in the conflict, but pursue the peace. Be among people, engage with people, confront people. And yes, there will be arguments. If you're involved with people, there's politics. And if you're involved with people, there's passion. And if you're involved with people, there's mischief. There are all sorts of things when you're involved with people. Still, get involved with people. And tirdofato es hasholim. But you pursue peace with among those people. And the Malbim makes a note. David, when he says this, is thinking of Doeg. The absolute opposite of these phrases that he's just described. So when we see that in King David's describing what it is to be a God-fearing person, he has paradoxical requirements. The first requirement is a passionate engagement in society. My goodness, but that brings one to all sorts of dangers and risks. True. So watch your tongue, do good, seek opportunities to do good. Desist from evil and pursue peace. And that's it. There you've got it. And that's God, Lashon Chomero, your tongue from evil. That's where the word Lashon Hora comes from. King David coined the words. So it's quite apt that it's in the Shmuel Shir, where we're studying the rise of King David, that we're actually learning all of this. Lashon Hora is not always quite so identifiable as Lashon Hara. The Lashon Hara is also talked about, Yirmiyahu talks about Lashon Hara as a chetz, as an error. Because we have to understand, why is Lashon Hara so devastating? Why is it something that the Torah takes so seriously? Do you know, if one eats chazer, if one eats pork, it's a very serious prohibition. But it's one prohibition. You have disobeyed, you've transgressed one mitzvah of the Torah. If you eat a little bit of food on Yom Kippur, a very serious transgression, you have transgressed one mitzvah of the Torah. If you speak a word of Lashon Hora, how many mitzvahs have you transgressed? 17 negatives and 14 positives. Speaking one word of Lashon Hora is like eating pork 31 times on Yom Kippur. That's how serious it is. It gives you some sense of the way the Torah sees it. And it's interesting that we live in a society where there is great emphasis on what we eat, and so there should be, because what we eat is critically important. And the Torah gives a lot of emphasis to what we eat. But what comes out of our mouths is 31 times as important as what goes into our mouths. And it's interesting that the laws that govern what we eat are quite extensively dealt with in the Torah. There are pages and pages in the Torah, like kosher animals and non-kosher animals, and kosher birds and non-kosher birds, and kosher fish and non-kosher fish, and on it goes. But nowhere does it say in the Torah, thou shalt not talk Lashon Hara. Which is quite interesting. It doesn't actually say those words. It's implied here, it's implied there, and we'll see, we'll track the source of this issue, of this prohibition, but it doesn't say anywhere, thou shalt not talk Lashon Hara. And you might say, well, the Torah just considers that as sure, everybody knows that. You don't need to be told by the Torah that you mustn't assassinate character. But if that were so, why would the Torah tell us that you mustn't murder? If the Torah only told us things that we didn't know or that were new to us. So the Torah is willing to say don't murder. It's difficult to understand why the Torah doesn't specifically prohibit Lashon Hara. And yet, in terms of seriousness, it's 31 transgressions, 17 negatives and 14 positives. Why is it so devastating, and why is it so evil? For many reasons, but the one reason is that Lashon Hara unleashes a force that once out in the world can no longer be controlled by its creator. It's not finite. It's a little bit like the difference between a conventional bomb and an atom bomb. The damage goes on and on and on and on and on, and you can't stop it. Once that word has been released, it cannot be taken back. And the chain effect of that word is just amplified and amplified and amplified. And so in terms of destroying people, destroying parts of people, destroying reputations, and destroying society, even more important, becomes a destructive society, Lashon Hara is one of the most powerful forms. And the Prophet Yirmiyahu refers to it as a chetz, as an arrow. And the one sense of it being an arrow is the same kind of thing. Once you've shot an arrow, you can't change your mind a second later and say, oh my goodness, look where it's going, it's going to kill somebody, I'd better get it back. It's too late. Once it's gone, even before it's committed the damage, it hasn't done anything yet, that it's out there and there's nothing you can do to haul it back. That's the nature of an arrow. That's the nature of Lashon Hara. Also important, the Vilna Gaon says that it's compared to an arrow because of the process of shooting an arrow. When you shoot an arrow, the more you pull the bow towards yourself, the further the arrow goes in the opposite direction. And so the action of sending off the arrow requires an action in the opposite direction. The stronger the action in the opposite direction is, the more forceful will be the emission of the arrow. He says Lashon Hara is the same. If you want Lashon Hara really to work, you've got to do the opposite of Lashon Hara first. You've got to give credibility. If you just say nasty things about a person, then people say, oh, you don't like him, you've got a personal problem with him. But if you first build the person up, I'm now teaching you how to do Lashon Hara real properly. If you want to really make it work, then... And the reason I'm teaching you this is not because I would like us all to go out and practice it, but because it's important to be able to identify it. Sometimes when you hear somebody praising, you think, oh, well, that's not so bad. He said some nice things about the person, he's got one or two bad things to say, I give him credit. Sometimes the nice things are pulling the bow. And the tighter you pull it, and the harder you pull in the opposite direction, the further that arrow is going to go. And so when people, that's why the Rambam and others suggest, just don't talk about people. That's the best. Just don't talk about people, except when it's necessary to do so, and we'll discuss that. But certainly when one is on the lookout for Lashon Hara, don't only look for the negative. Keep your ears very carefully pricked when you hear people praising others. Because the chances are that there'll be a barb somewhere in the praise. And that's what you've got to watch out for. And then it sticks, then it penetrates your subconscious because your defenses are down. And then you've got the problem. Where does this law come from? Two sources. The one is in the book of Vayikra, in the Parsha of Kedoshim, a fascinating section of Torah, full of the most amazing laws. And here there is a law that reads as follows. Lo yiseilech rochil be'amecho. Do not teilech rochil, I translated earlier as cause mischief. We'll see exactly what that word means. The Rambam will explain it. Don't cause mischief among your society. Lo yisa'amoid al dam reyecho. Do not stand by when your friend is being killed. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Interesting verse, that's all it says. And from Lo Ta'amod Adam Reyecho comes the law that you're not permitted to stand by. I understand that the law in this country is that you are permitted to stand by, that you don't have to get involved. If somebody is dying, if somebody is being brutalized, you don't have to get involved. Even if you're capable of getting involved, I think you might have to call the police, I'm not even sure about that. But you certainly don't have to do anything. And there was this famous case recently which is causing, I think, this state to review those laws, with those kids in Berkeley, was it? Sorry?
It happened in New
the students in Nevada, and students of Berkeley, and it happened in Las Vegas. A university kid, a college kid, stood by watching his friend murder a baby. Baby or child? Child and claimed, I'm not getting involved, it's not my business. And that's the ultimate of that kind of environment that we've established here, the ultimate of freedom. One of the faults that we have in the Western world today touches on what we discussed at the last year, and that is that even good things are bad in the wrong proportions, and even bad things are good in the right proportions. And freedom in the wrong proportions is evil, not just destroy, it's evil. And that's an example of freedom becoming evil. Where I am free, but he must be free to do his thing, and the laws, the legal system must deal with him. I'm a free citizen, I'm free to choose not to get involved. No, says the Torah, that's immoral. You are not permitted to stand by. If there's some way in which you could intervene, and you do not intervene, that's murder too. You're not permitted to do that. And it's interesting to me that in this country, there are sometimes, even when conservative people begin to attack moral issues, and abortion and all these things, well, it's good and that's fine, and homosexuality and all that, but you don't often hear them attacking the fundamental philosophy that is flawed. That there are aspects of the philosophy of the American legal system that are immoral. There are aspects of the philosophy of freedom that is immoral. It's biblically immoral to the Torah, universally, just wrong. To allow a person so much freedom that he doesn't have to intervene if he sees something terrible happening, that's immoral, and that's against the Torah. Now, from this Lo Telech Rochil, do not cause mischief, I'm going to learn a piece of Rambam with you. The Rambam at the end of Hilchos Deos says the following. Hameragel bechaveiro. Meragel means spy. A person spies on his friend. Now, what's the person of spying? What's the purpose of spying? You want to access information. What are you going to do with that information? Well, clearly, you're going to use it. And that is mischief. So to spy on your friend, over Beloita says, committing a transgression. What is the transgression? The one we've just learnt. Lo telech rochil ba'anecho. That's mischief making. And it causes death. People get killed as a result of this. It causes terrible destruction. And that's why, says the Rambam, Nismach lo veloitamud al dam reecho. Don't stand by when your friend is being murdered. The implication is, when you see somebody causing mischief, intervene. The law obligating us to intervene is not only when you see somebody killing somebody else. It's not only when you see somebody abusing and brutalizing somebody else. It's if you see somebody causing mischief, somebody's rumor mongering, somebody's spying, somebody's divulging secrets, confidential information. Intervene, because that's destructive. Don't stand by and watch society disintegrate. Don't stand by and watch society decay. Intervene and stop it. Lo tamad adam reecho. And then the Rambam says, Say ulamad ma'ir ledoeg ha'edomi. Look at Doeg. What happened to him? And we've learned already, as a result of Doeg's mischief making, the city of Kohanim of Nov, with hundreds of great fine Kohanim, was wiped out, erroneously, by mistake, by Shaul. And as a result of that, Shaul dies, and Yonatan dies, and the Kohanim die. The whole of society is fractured terribly because of Doeg's mischief making. So the Rambam, there you see the impact of mischief making. And the Mishnah explains, when Doeg made his mischief, if you remember, Doeg came to Shaul the king. And what did he say? I saw David go to Nov, and I saw the Kohanim there give him a sword and food. So they're supporting his rebellion. The Kohanim had no knowledge of a rebellion. They thought, as David told them, that David was on a royal mission. And they thought they were supporting Shaul by giving him bread and a sword. So if we would have asked the Kohanim, as Shaul in fact did, is this true what Doeg said? What would the Kohanim have said? Sure, it's true. So the mischief making is not telling something about the person that he would deny. If you come along and you say the president has done something that he shouldn't have done, and the president would say, that's not true, then I understand you're telling people things that he would deny. That's mischief making. But to tell people things that he would say, of course I did it. What's wrong with you? I didn't know there was anything wrong. I supported David because I assumed he was on a royal mission. So how mischievous was Doeg's action? We might think not all that mischievous. He didn't say there was bad intent. He didn't say the crime knew anything. He simply reported facts. And facts that the perpetrator would not deny. In fact, facts that the perpetrator would publicize. Yet doing so was mischief. And David and Doeg Edom is punished severely for that. That's Rechilus. And from that the Rambam says, Ezor Rochil, what is this kind of Rechilus? Ze shetoyim dvorim vohelech mizeh lezeh. It's a person who carries verbal merchandise and circulates and recycles it. Vome kachom apleni, kach bekach shumati apleni, and he runs around. Do you know what so-and-so said about you? Do you know what so-and-so said about him? He said this about him, and he said that about you, and you know what that one said, and when that one heard, and he goes backwards and forwards, and he causes the mischief. That's Rechilus. Telling other people what you've seen and heard. Afapishu emes, even though it's true. Hareze machri besharelom. Gossip destroys the world. Even true gossip. It just destroys the world. But nevertheless, yesh oven godel mizeh ad mo'ed. There's a much worse thing than that. The hu bichlal lavzeh, part of this transgression. And that's Lashon Hara. The hu amesaper bignus chaveru afapishu ener emes. That's a person who assassinates the character of his friend even though the words are true. So Rechilus is just passing information backwards and forwards, gossiping. Worse than that is Lashon Hara, character assassination. But if he tells a lie, Mikro Motzi Shemra Achaveru, then it's Motzi Shemra. So the Rambam tracks this by logically extending Rechilus. He says Rechilus is distributing information with the intent of causing mischief, even though the information was not secret or confidential. If you're not allowed to do that, then certainly you're not allowed to talk badly of a person, even if it's true. And if you're not allowed to talk badly of a person, if it's true, you're certainly not allowed to talk badly about a person if it's false. That's how the Rambam extrapolates all of these laws from the first one, which is the easiest transgression. That's Rechilus, the lightest transgression, is the mischief-making, the gossiping. If the Torah says, thou shalt not gossip, then the Torah certainly says, thou shalt not slander, and thou shalt not slander falsely. That goes without saying. He extrapolates it all from this one statement. That's the Rambam. The Ramban. The Rambam, the Ramban, and the Ramban, two authorities from around the 12th century. Maimonides and Nachmanides. The Ramban says the following. We're told in Dvorim, in Parashas Kitetze, Zochor es asher oso Hashem Elokecho l'Miriam. Remember what God did to Miriam. Baderech betzeischem Mitzrayim, when you were on the way coming out of Egypt. What did God do to Miriam? But for that we have to go back to Bamidbar. And there we have a piece of the Torah. It tells us the story. Batadaber Miriam v'Aaron b'Moshe. Miriam and Aaron spoke about Moshe. Miriam and Aaron were the brother and sister of Moses, Moshe. Al odos ha'isho ha'kushis asher lokoch. About the beautiful woman that he had married. Ki isho kushis lokach, because he had married a beautiful woman. What did they say? What were they talking about? We're not told that. Rashi brings the Midrash and tells us. What did they say? What she said was, did you know that Moshe and Tzipora, his wife, are not together anymore? That's all he said. All she said. Is that a very serious thing? That's all she said. Says Rashi, how did she know this? Was it public knowledge? If it was public knowledge, then you can say it. If it was not public knowledge, how did she know it? Rabbi Nosson explains, Miriam hoyso betzat Tzipora b'shor shenema l'moshe. Miriam was standing next to Tzipora, her sister-in-law, when people came to Moshe and said, Eldad and Medad misnabim b'machane. Eldad and Medad are prophesying. Kivan Sheshama Tzipora, Tzipora overheard the report coming to Moshe. So people came rushing to Moshe and said, Moshe, you know what's happening? People are prophesying. Elder and Medad are prophesying. Tzipora mumbled, Oyelu Meshaseim Shaleilu, in him is cooking the Nevuah. The poor wives, if their husbands have become prophets, I feel sorry for the wives. She Yiposhim in the Shaseim Kedeh Shepesh Bali Mimeni, because sooner or later their husbands will leave them as Moshe has left me. He has become so engrossed in his prophecy, in his sanctity, that even a normal relationship with the wife is no longer congruent with the levels of human detachment, in a sense, that he's experienced, and he isn't there. Umishom Yodo Miriam the Yigidol Aaron. And Miriam became very concerned. She was worried about that. She thought it was wrong. Our religion, as we've learned in the Maribim, does not preach separation. It does not preach disengagement. No matter how great Moshe is, why can he not have a normal relationship with Tzipora? So she goes, Miriam goes to Aaron and says, we have a problem here in the family. I understand from something Tzipora said that Moshe and she are no longer relating to one another. And Moshe is not correct in this, let's put it right. That's all she says. Is it mischievous? No. Is it with intent to do harm? No, it's with intent to do good. And says the Rambam there, the Ramban on that particular phrase, umikan nireh sherabbeinu yasu es mitzvah, and our rabbis declare this to be a mitzvah. Remember what God did to Miriam. What did God do to Miriam? She got leprosy. She had to separate from the camp, which publicized the fact that she'd spoken Lashon Hara, because leprosy was the result of Lashon Hara in those days. So when somebody got leprosy, they talked Lashon Hara. Dr. Blumenstein, you better bear that in mind in your practice when people come in with these skin disease. When I asked you what this wart was, you should have said, have you been speaking Lashon Hara? That was the role of a dermatologist in those days, was to check the morality of the people. What's going on? If you've got this kind of skin disease, what have you been doing with your tongue? Have you been talking Lashon Hara? And the rabbis learn from here that this is the mitzvah. It's not advising you, if you want to protect yourself from leprosy, don't talk Lashon Hara. That isn't so. How could it be that Lashon Hara, which is as serious as murder, listen to the Ramban's words, Lashon Hara, which is as serious as murder, there's a clear statement, thou shalt not do it. Don't tell me you work it out from Rechilus, like the Rambam does. Surely somewhere it has to say, don't do it. And says the Rambam, this is where it says, when the Torah says, don't ever forget what God did to Miriam, what the Torah is saying, don't ever forget the consequences of Lashon Hara. No matter how pure your intent, if the result is mischievous, if the result is destructive, I will be ruthless in my punishment, says God. And this, there's a clear warning, to desist from Lashon Hara, whether you talk it openly or you talk it secretly, whether your intention is to damage and abuse or your intention is not to damage at all, you may not talk Lashon Hara. That's it, period. Now that's interesting. You may not talk Lashon Hara at all, never. Reb Simcha Zissel Ziv. Simcha Zissel was the founder of the Kelmer School of Musar, and he lived the turn of the century, about that time. And Simcha Zissel says, interesting, this the Torah says, don't forget what I did to Miriam. Says Reb Simcha Zissel, or asks Reb Simcha Zissel, you know, the Torah is a very sensitive being. We don't know what tree Adam and Eve ate from. It certainly wasn't an apple tree, that we know for sure. She didn't eat an apple. But there's some views it was a fig, there's some views it was wine, there's some views it was wheat. We don't know what it was. Why doesn't the Torah tell us? Says the Gemara, because the Torah doesn't want us walking past fig trees if it was a fig tree and saying, ha, figs, you know what this caused. It's not nice. Not nice to talk about fig trees like that. So Lashon Hara is something we're not even allowed to talk about, inanimate objects. It's not just because it causes damage. It's just foul language. It's just ugly. To talk badly about things, it's just ugly. It's not, you should train children, by the way, also. Child says, I hate this food, I hate eggs, I hate children. Don't say that. Don't hate things. Don't talk badly about things either. I don't like it, I don't wish to eat it. Don't use negative language. When one uses a lot of negative language, one becomes very negative. Mostly people think that language is an expression of being. But truly, language is the creation of being. The words that you use over and over again are the words that form your personality. People who use energetic words constantly begin to think energetically and begin to act energetically. People who use depressive words and phrases become depressive. The words one chooses are really important for the motivation that one feels for the things that one does. And a person who says hate often and bad and wicked and evil often is a person who becomes hateful and wicked and evil and negative and destructive. And so God didn't tell us what tree it was so that we wouldn't go around saying that's the tree that caused it. God, who's so sensitive about fig trees, says don't ever forget that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara once in her life and I hammered her. Don't forget that. Tell your children that and your grandchildren that. They must all know about Miriam. This great woman, the only thing she ever did wrong as far as we know. Once she slipped up, she talked Lashon Hara. For what reason did she talk Lashon Hara? Because she was concerned. She thought Moshe was doing something wrong. And she thought Tzipora was suffering unreasonably for that. She wanted to correct the situation. There was no mischievous intent. And God is willing to say, don't forget what I did to Miriam. Says Rav Simcha Zisl, what the Torah is saying in that prohibition, don't forget what I did to Miriam, is also, and don't forget I was willing to publicize what I did to Miriam. There are times when you do have to talk about people. That's the other side of the laws of Lashon Hara. And unfortunately, when the laws of Lashon Hara are taught, they're generally taught only in the negative. There are a whole lot of things we're not allowed to do, and they're complex laws. But there are also laws that we do have to do. There are times we have to talk Lashon Hara. And that, says Rav Simcha Zisl, is clearly implied in that statement. Don't forget what I did to Miriam. When the Ramban says that's the source of the laws of Lashon Hara, says Rav Simcha Zisl, what the Ramban intends is, and you must expand that to understand there are times when you do have to talk Lashon Hara. When are those times? I'm not going to go through them all because they are complex laws. I just want to open their complexity to you. Perhaps one day we'll actually have a shiur where we'll go through them, those who are interested in actually learning the technical details. But let me give you a sense of it. One, for example, is the Sefer HaChassidim is an interesting case that's often been discussed in rabbinic circles, and I just came across it for the first time now. What the law clearly stated is what about therapy? What about somebody, whether you're a former therapist or you're just a friend, and somebody needs to release some anger to you and tell you that what his mother did to him when he was a child, or his father, or his husband or wife, or friend. Just, he's got to release it. And you know that by allowing him to release it to you, he won't carry on talking about it. But the best way to get rid of it is for him to talk. It's not for evil intent. He just needs to express himself. Then you need to allow him that space to say it, you need to encourage him to say it, and you need to listen to it. Other cases of where you have to talk Lashon Hara. The man who dedicated himself to the laws of Lashon Hara, among many other things, he didn't only do this, but he applied an enormous amount of effort to this, is the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim died in 1933, a recent authority. Very saintly man, lived in Eastern Europe. A man whose saintliness and knowledge is beyond anything we can easily conceive of. There's the lovely story of a court case that was taking place, and the Chofetz Chaim was being brought to give a character reference for one of the people involved in the court case. And the lawyer, before presenting the Chofetz Chaim, said to the judge, before I present the next witness, let me tell you a story about him. And he told him the famous story about the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim was in shul, and he found a man who didn't have a place to go for Shabbos. So he said to him, please join me for Shabbos, come home. The man was very grateful. And the man came, and the Chofetz Chaim gave him what he... The Chofetz Chaim was a very poor man, but he gave him a beautiful meal, and then he found a place for him to sleep in his home. He had a very small home. He made sure he had a blanket. He woke up in the middle of the night to see it got cold all of a sudden. He was worried about the guest. He took his fur coat and he put it over the guest to make sure that the guest wouldn't be cold. The great Chofetz Chaim, this is a strange peasant in his house. And the care that he took of this person, he wakes up in the morning and the guest isn't there. And he goes into his main room and he sees the candlesticks aren't there either. And he goes to the door and he sees the guest running down the street holding the silver candlesticks. And the Chofetz Chaim runs, shouts after him and says, "You can have them as a gift." Because the Chofetz Chaim says, "I've lost them already. What do I need to him to go to hell, to go to Gehenna because he stole from me? I don't have anything. Let me give them to him as a gift and then he's not a thief." That's how this man loves people. So the judge looks at the lawyer and says, "Do you really believe that story?" And the lawyer realized straight away who he was dealing with and he said, "No, my lord, I don't believe that story. But they don't tell stories like that about you and me." That's the Chofetz Chaim. And the Chofetz Chaim goes into the details of the laws of Lashon Hara. What can you say, what can't you say, when can you say, when can't you say? Let me give you some ideas of it. If you see a person who has stolen from somebody or damaged from somebody, whether it's known or it's unknown, or a person has embarrassed somebody, caused indignity to somebody, and even if you're the only one who saw it, there's no clear evidence, only you saw it, Yochol l'saper ha'dvorim libnei odom kedei la'azor asher oshomu. If the way you can help the person who has been wronged is by publicizing it, then publicize it. And to cause a despising of bad deeds. Now that's very interesting. What the Chofetz Chaim is saying is that we mustn't allow our tolerance for people to lead to tolerance of bad deeds, of immoral actions. Once again, you see the difference between how unaligned our Western society is with Torah thinking. Our sense of freedom is, don't judge actions. Who am I to say that homosexuality is bad? Who am I to say that abortion is wrong? Who am I to say this is right, this is wrong? Well, let people make their own choices. But lift up a newspaper and read. And see how much Lashon Hara there is. How much character assassination. We are absolutely tolerant of actions and totally intolerant of people. We come out with torrents of bad words to say about people we disagree with. But we'll never say something bad about an action. Abortion's okay. Everything's okay except murder and theft and rape. Apart from that, basically anything's okay. As long as you're not depriving a person of his freedom. That's the only avera left in the Western world, the only transgression. Don't deprive people of their freedom. So murder, you're depriving him of freedom. Rape, you're depriving her of freedom. Theft, damage, you're depriving them of freedom. To lie to somebody, you're depriving them of freedom. Those are bad things. Don't do that because you're depriving them of freedom. But anything else, that's okay. What about murder where you're not depriving the other person of freedom because he invites you to murder him? That's not murder. That's called assisted death. You're doing a mitzvah. Dying is a great thing and you're helping a person die. That's not murder because there's no imposing of your will on his. There's no imposition on his freedom. That's the natural outcome. Says the Chofetz Chaim, "Leganos hamasim harom b'fnei abus." When you have to expose something in order to ensure that society retains its distaste of wrong and immoral action, then you may speak about it. However, he says, there need to be 7 conditions in place before you can do that. It's not so simple. 7 conditions. And I'll give you an idea of the conditions. That you've seen it yourself, it's not second-hand knowledge. Don't tell people the rumors you heard, only if you yourself have seen it. To be very careful that it is in fact wrong. Number 3, first talk to the person who did it. Give him a chance to withdraw, to apologize, to fix it himself. Don't talk to others before you've talked to the person. Number 4, don't exaggerate when you do talk. Tell it as it is. Number 5, your intention must be to fix, not to cause more mischief. Number six, if there's any way that you can achieve that outcome without the talk, then do it without the talk, even if it's harder and more expensive. Find any other way you can. Use this as a last resort. Number seven, that you make sure that by doing so, you're not causing damage to the person you're talking about. The intention is not to damage him. The intention is to repair the wrong and to improve people's perceptions, but not to cause damage even to him. You don't have the right to do that, even if he's a bad person. You can't go around damaging bad people. So you can't talk about him because you want to punish him. You can't talk about him because you want to damage him. Those seven conditions need to be in place. Further on, in the area of Ruchilus, he talks about the fact that in business, Ruchilus is more of an issue in business. If two people want to get into partnership and you know something about the one partner that is unsavory, do you intervene? Do you tell people? If you know for sure that that one party will suffer because of his ignorance of these facts, you do need to tell him. You've got to warn a person. So if you know A and B are going into partnership and you know B is a rogue and A doesn't know that, and for sure A is going to suffer, you'd better warn A. You're not allowed to stand by and not warn A. And of course the same applies with Shidduchim. Two people are going to get married. You also, and you know for sure this is going to be a bad thing, this is a bad person, you warn the person, you tell them. But there have to be five conditions in place. And again, he lists the five conditions. No exaggeration, that you're sure that it's going to take place, your intention must be to repair. If you can do it any other way, the same kind of things. And clearly he says you can't introduce people to each other in matters of matrimony or business where you know one might suffer. However, he says that this is when somebody asks your opinion, this is when two people are coming together, but if two people are already together in business, you can't go and talk to the one about the other. It's too late. So there are lots of laws that govern the doing it or the not doing it. But what is important is the fact that, and then immediately in the next phrase, Lo tamud al dam reyecho, don't stand by as your friend gets killed. The first way we interpreted that is that when people are talking mischievously, intervene, just as you would if they were killing one another. But Reb Simcha Zissel says that there's another interpretation here, and that is, while on the one hand you are not permitted to talk Lashon Hara, and you're not permitted to talk mischievously, on the other hand, if you desist from talking Lashon Hara when you have to, that's as serious as murder too. So don't think you can play safe by never talking. Don't think you can play safe by not intervening when there's a need to intervene. And that's a simple, because this places a whole different obligation on how we use our mouths. And again, when Lashon Hara is talked about it, and taught, is normally taught as don't do this, don't do that, don't talk, don't do that. And as a result of that, you hear crazy things. I've heard school teachers refuse to tell the parents about something the child's doing wrong because it's Lashon Hara. I've heard Shidduchim being allowed to go ahead, even though it's well known that the husband is a wife abuser or whatever like that, because you mustn't talk Lashon Hara. People involved in business who've allowed business deals to take place where they know what's going to happen because you mustn't talk Lashon Hara. That isn't so. We have an obligation not to harm people. And one can harm people by an act of commission, and one can harm people by an act of omission. Omitting to act and thereby harming people is as serious as acting and harming people. And so if the only way you can save a person from damage is by talking Lashon Hara, there is no other way, then you're obligated to talk Lashon Hara. Just as if the only way you can save a person's life is by murdering another person who's threatening him, you may murder the other person. If you see somebody running in here and he's being chased by somebody else with a knife, and the only way we can save this guy is by shooting the pursuer and we may kill him, we have to shoot him. That we're obligated to do. And so it is with Lashon Hara. If the only way you can save an innocent person from the aggressive intent of a ruthless person is by making known the ruthlessness of that person, then you're obligated to do so. And not doing so is Lo tamud al dam reyecho. Not doing so is standing by while your friend is dying, standing by while your friend is killed, and that's not permitted either. So we're walking a balancing act all the time. Do I intervene? Do I not intervene? Do I talk? Do I not talk? What can I say? What can I not say? How do I say it in a way? Is there another way of doing it without talking? Because once I talk, I am unleashing a force that I will no longer be able to control. So let me seek every other option. One has to deal with it the same as a president of the United States would deal with releasing a nuclear weapon. Is there another way? Is there any other option? Because if there is, we better use the other options. The only time we would use this is if there is no other option. Because once it's unleashed, the devastation is endless. We have no control over the devastation. That's the power of Lashon Hara. This evening's shiur is in memory of my father and my mother, for that matter. This is my father's yahrzeit, my mother's yahrzeit is in only a few days' time. And they're people who put a great deal into many individuals in this part of the world and into this community, into the PJC community. Many of you remember them and benefited from them. And hence I thought it appropriate to dedicate tonight's shiur to that yahrzeit. And the subject matter is of interest too, because Lashon Hara was something that as children we were raised with an awareness of. Just as we weren't permitted to do anything else that was forbidden, and our parents were quite strict on that, Lashon Hara was no exception. If we started talking about someone quite quickly, particularly my father, would make us aware of the fact that Lashon Hara, there's no reason to say that, just it's not relevant. Yet we grew up with quite a normal kind of society, we grew up with quite normal conversation. There is a danger that Lashon Hara can cause people not to talk. I mean, what do you talk about around the table? And particularly if it's Shabbos, you know, people think you can't talk about your business, so that cuts out 90% of your interest. And you can't talk about people because that could lead to Lashon Hara. So all there's left to talk about is what the rabbi said in shul, which is often very boring. And so the conversation is round and round and round that, and then the laws of Shabbos and then the Sedra, and then you sort of exhaust it. And it's not very colorful. It's much more colorful to talk about people. So would I say to you that around my parents' table we didn't talk about people? Of course we talked about people. Did we laugh about people? Yes, we laughed about people. There was humor, there was talk, and there was sometimes Lashon Hara. There was sometimes negative talk when that was appropriate. There was sometimes negative talk when it wasn't appropriate too. I won't suggest that we were angels. But the emphasis was there were times when there was talk that what somebody was doing was wrong, that something that was happening was wrong, and why it was wrong, and how it shouldn't take place, and how it could take place differently, and that would lead into a conversation as well. So while we have to exercise enormous care to prevent the use of Lashon Hara, at the same time, there has to be an ability to engage in normal conversation, which means talking about people, and to learn to do it in a way that is positive. And that's the impact of King David's statement with which I started the shiur. Mi'o ish echofetz chaim. I'm not talking to people who never talk. I'm not talking about to people who sit around the table and they cannot talk about anything except the Sedra. It's very nice to talk about the parasha, but I'm not talking to people who cannot talk about it. I'm talking about people who are engaged in life. If you're engaged in life, you're going to be dealing with people and passions and arguments and disagreements and good things and bad things, and you're going to be talking about people. Just watch Metzor Lashon Chomero. Don't unleash devastating statements. And don't be deceitful. That way you can be righteous and engaging. If you don't watch your mouth, you cannot be righteous and engaging. You would have to disengage in order to be righteous. All the other rules, that comes later. But if you're in a society and you want to retain righteousness, there is a necessity at the same time to watch one's verbal usage, to watch how one uses language and how one utilizes language. Not to cause one to become paralyzed, socially paralyzed and conversationally paralyzed, but to be able to find that balance between talking about people in a playful way or in a learning way and talking about people in a destructive way. Very often as people become religious, they lose their sense of humor. You might notice. A very disturbing tendency. One of the first giveaway signs. The first thing you probably see that they're wearing that sits it out. Then they start wearing a kippah, or the other way around, they start wearing a yarmulke. Then they start wearing a hat. Then they start wearing the yarmulke sticking out the back of their hat. And finally they lose their sense. Not finally, quite early on, they lose their sense of humor. And I think that part of the reason that they lose their sense of humor is because of Lashon Hara. And if you can't talk about people, what's there to laugh about? So they just stop laughing. One can. There are funny situations that you can share with people. There are playful talks about people. There are stories to tell about people that are delightful and lovely. There's a lot that one can, and one needs to seek opportunities to promote and present people, not as the Magon said, in a way where you're preparing the arrow, but to promote and present people in a delightful way, in a colorful way, in a nice way, in a beautiful way. One needs to seek the opportunities to talk these things and to make these things known, so that one's conversation is not dull and it's not unidimensional, but one's conversation is able to deal with human issues and to address human issues and to engage in human issues, but constantly watching Lashon Hara. If we're going to stop talking about people, then we're disengaging from life. If we're going to become paralyzed with conversational fear, then we're going to disengage from life. Is it difficult to get the balance right? It's incredibly difficult to get the balance right. But that's the art of being a Jew and living a life. Being a Jew and stopping to live, that's easy. Living life and not being a Jew, that's easy. But to live a life and be a Jew, that's the challenge that faces us. And that, more than anything, is the subject of this series of Shiurim, which will continue next Monday night.